as always, there's space if anybody has anything they'd like to offer or any questions. No pressure.
So appreciated, Master, his commentary on the passages in the Salt of the Earth. I just felt like the clearest that particular biblical image and passage had been to me. Put through Master's words was really special and so clear for our path and work too, to really be that.
In that same part, he was talking about humans being the light of the world and their consciousness being aware of nature. I was wondering if you had any experiences from the High Sierras that, like, maybe you might, there might be something to share about your own experiences of getting out of desire nature, from being in nature and away from the world.
I think what nature always offers us is this ego-free zone to give ourselves permission to experience life without the need to be performative or put on any kind of cape or mask about what others' expectations are of us. But to just be completely free in ourselves. And as we start to let those layers peel back, or they start falling off of us, all the things that we carry in order to participate in the world, then we certainly can experience nature not as a physical reality, but as our very self. I just, the most tangible experiences I've had was just every day realizing my own awareness was no longer just in my own bodily needs or wishes for the day. It was in an awareness of exactly where the moon was in its cycle for the month, and where it was going to rise at, and exactly which constellations were at which points in the sky, because when you live without electricity and you're a part of the great life, it's so natural that your consciousness expands to include all of these things. So I think in a very real way, we miss out on a lot when we embark only in the complexities of this world. It's not that we can't also expand to include God in the cities and God in these other ways, but there is the purity of God's creation. And I think that when we embark on our own purification process, which is really what's represented in living in a place like a mountain, as like we saw in the film last week, when we start to relate to all of creation differently. And as I've said before, the whole inspiration that was placed inside of me was that there had to be a way to provide for our needs as humans that honored that basic realization of our oneness with life, of our mutual interdependence with life and nature, rather than simply controlling it and ripping everything up and building buildings everywhere and paving everything in order to meet our needs. And so I think it's very natural that once we start to feel ourselves a part of everything, we behave differently. We're not trying to control everything and everyone. It's we feel our own path unfold before us and our own opportunity to merge the realities in God. And I think nature just becomes a mystical reality. It's something that can't really be explained physically. Nature responds to us. We all know this. You know, how many times you sit on the porch and the hummingbird comes and looks straight in your face? Why? God is in that hummingbird. We know this. So many times the shooting star fires at the exact moment that you need to feel God's presence. How? Because it's God's intelligence. It's God revealing, making himself known to us. This is the nature of God's creation all the time. But we so often get tangled in what we want from it, and we actually close ourselves off to experiencing it. But when we're simple, when we go through the sadhana to become pure, then we don't doubt it ever. We could never be alone. We could live in a forest the rest of our life. We never feel alone. And that was the power that I felt infused into me living in the High Sierra, was that all the ideas that I needed something from the world or from someone outside of myself fell away. And it was like I realized I could be happy on this rock. And that is a great power. But it's to be respected and honored. And I wish that for everybody, to be able to go sit under a tree and just know that every answer, everything is right there inside of you, within that tree, in you, in the tree of your own life. And I think nature is always reaching out with that understanding for us. It's just our own ability to trust and listen, to become quiet and calm. I remember the first time I heard the sound of Om inwardly, and it was sitting by the South Fork of the San Joaquin River at Mono Hot Springs, and it was when I was having to face the reality that I was being asked to leave the mountain, and I was devastated. I've said this before. It was at that point the hardest thing I ever did was leave the mountain after the second season, knowing I had to go back down into the Central Valley, knowing I had to see how people were living. When you feel yourself one with all life, it's pretty hard to look around and see the way we're living and not feel pain. And I felt it immensely, and I was scared. And I went and I prayed next to that river, and all of a sudden, the Om vibration filled me up completely. It went from outside of myself listening to the river to completely filling my whole body and my brain and my head and expanding out to infinity. That was the first time I ever felt that. I truly believe sitting next to that river helped me immensely. Mm-hmm. It's possible I could have gone down into Fresno and sat in a Walmart parking lot and experienced the same thing. Anything is possible in God, but I don't know that that would have worked for me. Mm-hmm. It's possible for you too. The river is a better source, but you can decide. God is everywhere. One of the things that the grandkids of Alex yesterday, that was his life celebration, shared about him was one of the grandkids said how Alex was, they called him Papa, was amazed anything in nature, in life, and that it didn't matter if they brought him the 1,000th sand dollar from the beach. Every time he would look at it with a whole new sense of awe, and he would say, but look, this one has a marking over here. It's different than all the other ones. And the mom of the kids actually said it. I thought for a while like he was just hamming it up for these kids, and like that he was just putting on a show about it. And then I realized this is how he was all the time. That he was always had a sense of awe for all of the things in nature. And they all were describing how he was able to always sit there, and he would always notice when the birds and when the different creatures would come and go. He would always notice everything. And that was one of his main practices, was just sitting there and being totally present to see everything. And the kid said, "And we saw an owl yesterday." Mm-hmm. And it was like by being with Alex that they were acknowledging, this 7 or 8 year old was acknowledging like that his consciousness and ability to see was helping them to see, and help them see the owl. And I thought, yeah, if we have eyes to see, it's always here. It's always there.
Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Carla that I had met in the mountains. And she, when I first met her, we immediately realized we both loved Yogananda. And when I was getting to know her more, she had this bit, she kept wanting me to come back and lead people up into the mountains and do, what was the word she would say? She had a word for it when people just go out on their own. Not like, it's like a vision quest basically, but she had a different word that was very humble, and I think that's something we should all have time for at some point, to go out into pure nature only by ourselves, and only be open to experiencing God in that creation, because if we haven't done that yet, we're missing out on something. Mm. And I think once we know it, once we experience that essential salt in all of God's creation, then we don't ever doubt it again. But I think as long as we are still wondering about it, we need to do more to get to the source of it and not have to wonder what nature is or isn't. In a lot of ways, I think our whole path as humans, living in the right way that Master was talking about, it comes down to spiritualizing our relationship with nature, because God's creation is the thing that we all share. There's always going to be human sizzle-ovation, but it's always going to be a reflection of how we relate to God's creation. And so when we spiritualize it, not as a material reality alone, but as a mystical one that is infused with God's intelligence, not as something our mind understands, but as something that's truly magical, all of the problems will be resolved. Everything will be solved, because we will be relating to life from the other side. Peony and I were driving Leo home from market on Friday, and he wanted to come with us because he said that I always take him on adventures. So I'm driving home and I'm thinking, oh man, I don't really know of an adventure to take him on right now. I just want to go home. But then my last second one is to pull off on Cascade View Drive and drive into the magical, mystical forest. And then when I turned off on the Cascade View Drive, he called me out on it. He said, "Why are you turning here?" And I was like, "Don't worry, man. We're going to get to the magical, mystical forest and you'll understand." And so then as soon as we hit it, it's on both sides framed by two massive cedar trees. And as soon as we entered it, he goes, "Oh my goodness, I like it in here." Mm. And he went into a state of awe. And he's not normal, but but he is so open. And he just kept saying, "It feels so good in here. I really like it in here. It's magical in here." And we're driving along and I'm kind of pointing out the little cabins that I like and just making notes for him to tune into. But mostly it's quiet and he's in awe. And then we get to this new construction, and it's a recently logged plot with two stories, all plywood. And he goes, "Oh no, this isn't magical anymore." And I'm like, "Oh, I know, it kind of hurts, doesn't it?" And we're just driving, and he goes, "That felt like a city." And I was like, "Oh, Liam, so he's just so pure." And it's like, nobody could tell him to feel that. He just was feeling. He just was in his feeling nature and feeling what it felt like to go into the forest and into the mysticalness of it, and then feeling like what it felt like to have it disturbed and for man to come in and just behave crudely. And it's going to be a big mansion that overlooks the water, and they'll be very happy, I'm sure. But it's a little jarring if you were like a squirrel in those trees. But at any rate, I thought, yeah, when you're with the eyes of a child, it all is all very natural. Well, I was curious if anybody had reflected on the debt analogy, because you don't have to look around very long to see that debt being really the common theme of our sizzle-ovation. And really what debt means is like getting what you want first, mm-hmm. instead of doing the work first. Mm-hmm. And I think you could make an argument that there's a time when you need to take out debt. Even Master took out some debt at one point for Mount Washington. I'm sure God told him to do it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't for himself is the difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, in the world that we're operating in, it's a lot of getting what you want first. And the real secret sauce is that when we learn to become givers of the things that we're reaching out for in life, that we don't accrue debt. We actually, we start to collect our own kind of interest. Mm-hmm. And we don't worry about when it's all going to get paid back to us. We just trust the process of it. And when God does repay it, that interest that's been accruing, it's a wonderful reward. Mm-hmm. But we're not doing it for the reward. Mm-hmm. We're doing it to be God's givers. And I think it turns the whole debt cycle around, and it makes it something that we're not trying to put other people in debt either, so we shouldn't give anybody anything that has strings attached to it. When we give, we should do so freely. And it's one reason I love that we've been doing services for a year and a half, and never a single time has there been a basket. It's just not the point that we have a moneyed interest in coming into this space. It has to be God's interest. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot to reflect on for debt. And I saw in the Skagit Co-op's newspaper the other day that the Skagit Co-op was doing a, it's a good, great organization. I love the co-op. They're doing a grant program, they called it, for farms. And they're giving farms $6,000. And I was like, nice. And then I was like reading on. And they're giving farms $6,000, but then they expect repayment through the produce. And I was like, oh, well, that's not really like giving the money to the farmers. That's like pre-buying tomatoes in advance.
Yeah.
And that, but I'm not saying there's no place for it, but I've just learned at this stage of even running the farm, it's not a good model for us to be pre-selling things that we don't have yet. Mm-hmm. It's much better to show up and make the offering than it is to receive the thing first and then have to back pay the inspiration later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sent the brothers an article last night, and it's about the apple farms on the other side of the mountain, and how many dozens of them have been bought up by investment companies in the last decade. It's like within another 10 years, almost, I would say 90% of Washington's apple production will be not owned by the farmers themselves. And this is, of course, the debt model. They interviewed this third generation farm lady, and she was saying that every year they start the year with, do you guys remember the number?
500.
A $500,000 loan every year, because there's nothing guaranteed in the year. And about 50% of the time they make money, and 50% of the time they just lose money. But the loan enables them to start again. Their best year in the last 7 years was when there was a total failure and they made their money from crop insurance. But every year they start out with a $500,000 loan, and they're working just to get back to break even. And this is like the one of the top Honeycrisp providers in all of North America. And I'm not picking on the farm. I mean, this is a product of this world that we're living in, but I think that it's dangerous when it is predicated on the debt first. You end up in a hopeless cycle of without any real way of getting out beyond it. And I think if we can apply that understanding to our spiritual life too, we just really want to do the right thing up front. We don't want to take things for ourselves up front. We just want to, we can be the givers. We can just be focused on living in the right way and doing the right thing all the time, like Master said. And were you going to say something?
I was going to say I appreciate it about that concept of death.
I really appreciate you, the debt part of your talk really hit home, and because most of my life was around paying off debt on every level, and it was painful and it was awful, but somewhere way deep inside I knew that I had to stick it out and I had to pay for it. And at one point you know, people, I had gotten into financial debt because I started a business and gotten big financial debt, and people were advising me to file bankruptcy. And I, through the grace of God, this is before I, you know, officially got on the path, but through the grace of God, I was like, I got myself into this and I cannot walk away from it. And I'm sure many times I have done that. I've walked away from it. But this particular time I said, no, I'm paying this off. And it was awful. It was really hard. And, you know, I was borderline destitute. You know, really, I had no money and just barely making it. So it's so important you talking about this because it's very high price you pay. And all you have to do is, it's just that one little decision. And I made that decision in the wrong way many, many times. So thank you for talking about that. It's really,
thanks for sharing that, your experience. Yeah, debt can like quietly eat us up too. And you know, if we spend our time running from it, then it's really, it can be a monster in the closet that we can't escape. And I feel that with all the spiritual things too, you know, all the, just the attitudes about life take on their own kind of debt, and it just keeps building when we keep making the wrong decisions. It's like a debt that keeps collecting interest on us, and then suddenly it's, we have to face like the bank is calling and it's all due, and oh my gosh, it's the worst. But I think it's never, you know, nothing is ever too late in God. The point is never that we are defeated by it. It's always that we just face what's been going on or what we've been up to and make good on it, start making our payments.
years ago, I was faced with a spiritual debt that I'd put up through wrong living, and I wasn't aware of it until I really started to be sincere about sadhana and trying to be regular and really the surrender part. And then it's like God started to reveal to me all the accounts that were, and they would just come flooding into my consciousness in dreams. And and so I felt really hopeless initially, like, oh my gosh, this is massive, you know, like being aware of the totality of all the decisions and how they become who you are, and they shape your subconscious. And then I was reading a talk of Master, and I think it was, and at the same time I found this old recording from Dr. Lewis, and he was talking about, you know, you're putting up this karma, and it's debt, and you're putting up the karma, and you're putting it up, and you're putting it up, and you're gonna have to pay for it later, you know. And I'm like, but it was actually so empowering when I heard him say that, because I realized that there wasn't a boogeyman, that was there wasn't some kind of negative force that was the cause of my suffering. That it was actually just me all along doing that, and I realized, well, I can stop now, and so when you just said the making those payments, you know, like I can start making the payments, and I can do the right thing now, and little by little, just really started, the weight started to lift, not even like, I mean, pretty fast actually, amazingly, the spiritual debt part wasn't lost on me. And then, you know, loved ones, where you see how a lifetime of thinking a certain way and feeling a certain way, and the narrative can become like set in stone. It can feel like that, but there's always the window for grace.
That I felt between the Master's commentary on the Sermon on the Mount and the debt concept. And first of all, I was thinking, so much of my life I've thought, oh yeah, I have to follow this passion and this ambition and see it through and get caught up and swept up in that, and then feel somewhat like, oh, I'm not in, I'm too much in the world, and I'm not in, you know, I should be wanting this spiritual awareness alone. But what you are sharing is like something that's also been like dawning on me lately, like this, that is part of what you're doing here, and that is appropriate. It's experiencing all of those things to their full extent, and then spiritualizing those things, and it's okay. And I blame it on being Aries, but there's this impatience because you can see the goal and you know it's there, or even there's this soul memory of it where you are in oneness, and all that's necessary is made manifest instantaneously, and there is this peace and this flow, and yet you're not there. And the impatience is like, but I know it's there somewhere. Let me get there. But the paying off of the debt along the way is the right route and the right action. And just recently, that's kind of lifted. Like, oh, I am doing these things because they're necessary. And then back to the Sermon on the Mount part is that, I'm not sure what the first word was, but like every something and tittle will be
it's like that must be
accounted for
until it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are in that oneness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's no more debt accrual. There's no more karma creation. No matter your action, it is the will of God only.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find so much joy in that exact understanding of the path and how so many of the sectarian boundaries and religious differences and the different perspectives of life just fall away completely. When we are ready to embrace the soul's reality of just paying off our karmic debt and getting free from creating more of it, it really unites us with everyone, and I feel it's the foundational understanding we just have to hold on to have the right attitude for every circumstance that comes up. And we're not really separate from anyone because we see what other people are at and maybe why they feel the way they do, maybe even why they're mad at us. It all just has its proper place because everybody has to follow all those threads all the way through to arrive at paying off the debt. And some people are just, they're big spending right now. And, you know, we've all been there too, where it's just in the debt phase where you just gotta build a mountain of debt before you are ready to understand that it does have repercussions.
Mm.
And that's the kind of the promise of being in this classroom, is that we will get the lessons, the repercussions will come. So it's not our job to even have to tell anyone. It's just God sorts it all out. But the universality of that process, it really unites us on the deepest level, and I find a lot of joy just in being able to hold on to that. You know, we saw a number of people, Ananda, a lot of former Ananda people yesterday, but who are maybe still identified. One of them referred to all of us as fringe Ananda, and Peony said, I think we're actually beyond Ananda. and the lady actually loved it, and it gave her permission to universalize herself, because there still is part that's holding on to this idea that I have to be in this group to be valid, to have my relationship with God. I defined in this way. And it was like, she was the right person to say it to. Somebody else might smack you, but it was the right thing to say, and it brought actually a lot of joy, because we're all in the end universal children of God, and we just, that's the only understanding that really matters.
Well, I do want to say that it's a real blessing to be here with you all,
mm-hmm.
my brothers and sisters. and in your talk today, I was resonating with the part about the ossification of structures and
mm-hmm.
practices, and just, it's just beautiful to see how life is blossoming here,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just thinking about the parts of myself that didn't feel quite right, stuck in some of the structures,
mm-hmm.
that I was living in,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, it's just really sweet to even see how the chants are improvised beautifully by
mm-hmm.
musicians, and just it I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just so grateful that I was guided here to be here with you all today.
Amen. Thank you, Sharon. What a treat. Sharon just dropped from a cloud last night. It's really nice to have you here. Yeah. How long will you be here?
Till tomorrow.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Today,
Sandra and
visitors
coming
at noon.
Yeah, soon.
Okay. Has anybody discussed lunch? Hopefully.
Nope.
That would be the chance.
Yeah.
It could be nice to have a lunch at Haven.
Yeah.
Sandra and Gary are coming to play bluegrass with our
burgeoning
bluegrass band. So if anybody has inspiration to work on the food front, that could be really helpful. Okay.
Make potatoes.
Okay, we got a potato. Nice. Thank you. I'm sure it'll all work and we don't need to figure it all out, but as long as we know the meat is there.
Yeah. Sandra said she's bringing cannellini bean dish.
All right.
Cool.
Sharon, these friends of ours, Sandra and Gary, are in their mid-80s, and we first found them because they play in a bluegrass band called the Band of Friends, and they're all quite older people, and immediately found them and was like, these people are amazing. And then individually, it seems like with every one of them, we've found like, there's six of them, we found like a great avenue of friendship with them, so it's been really special. This is the first time they've come over to play with you guys.
Mm-hmm. So we're the friends of the Band of Friends. Band of Friends friends.
Band of Friends friends.
Friends.
Well, happy Sabbath, everyone.
Happy Sabbath. Thank you.
Thank you.